is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, everyone. Happy Friday. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I am obviously not Tom Hartman. I am Danielle, here with Shano, sitting in for Tom today. He is at the Talkers Convention up in New York City, so he will be back on Monday. He's there, taking part in a panel discussion.
He's talking.
He's talking at the Talkers Convention. All kinds of good stuff. But we may hear from him a little later. He has some thoughts on the TPP that he can't wait to share. So we'll see if Tom calls
into
his
own. Today is a big day for it. We're going to cover that a lot today because a lot of votes going on. So now is a very crucial time. So Tom wants to make sure he gets in and talks about that. Everyone should do. So that is coming up.
Right. And in the meantime, while you're listening to this show, if you'd like to call your congressperson and tell them what you'd like them to do on the TPP, that's 202-225-3121. That's 225-3121. But there is some other big news going on, including Hillary's upcoming announcement tomorrow, Saturday, at Four Freedoms Park in New York, named after the late, great FDR. So joining us to talk about that and what those four freedoms are is the one, the only, Harvey Kaye, professor of democracy and justice studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, author of numerous books, including The Fight for the Four Freedoms, What Made FDR and the Greatest Generation Truly Great. Welcome, Harvey. Thank you for joining us.
Well, what a pleasure to get to talk to you two. Not that I have anything against Tom. I love Tom, but it's great to talk to you two again.
We're going to start a conspiracy here. Shane's shaking his head at me. Thank you so much for joining us. If anybody can describe and express the importance of Roosevelt's four freedoms and what they represent in terms of his presidency and to the American ideal, it's you, Harvey. If somebody's not familiar with them, how do we explain the four freedoms?
Okay, well, let's start with the fact that it really comes from a speech that Franklin Roosevelt gave in January 1941, precisely January 6, 1941, what we think of as the annual State of the Union address.
And it was a State of the Union address in which he was warning about the dangers of fascism and Japanese imperialism. He had no doubt that in time the United States would be drawn into the war. But in the meantime, he felt it essential for the United States to turn itself into the arsenal of democracy and in that fashion provide a lend-lease program for Britain. And once he covered that, once he explained to Americans why it was essential for them to rev up in defense of the nation and in preparation to possibly have to fight fascism, he then said to them, but we ought not to sacrifice all of the things we've accomplished the last 8 years in the New Deal, the kind of social democratic, what he would have called liberal programs that had addressed the environment, the public infrastructure, the creation of Social Security, and of course the National Labor Relations Act, empowering workers with collective bargaining rights backed up by the federal government. So he said, we ought not to sacrifice that. In fact, if we're going to prepare for the nation's defense and possibly war, the best thing we can do is to expand upon those programs, which obviously didn't make Republicans in Congress very happy hearing that. But it actually thrilled a lot of Americans to know that even as war might be on the horizon, that they were not going to sacrifice all the things that they had been fighting for. And then he said that we should look forward. In fact, we should cultivate a world, and Americans, when they heard world, were thinking especially of their own nation, a world and a nation characterized by four fundamental freedoms. And those freedoms, he then proceeded to explain, were first, freedom of speech and expression. Second, freedom of worship or freedom of religion. Third, freedom from want. And fourth, freedom from fear. And as it was reported later, and I think it was Eleanor herself who wrote in her diary, there were quite a few Republicans who sat on their hands when they heard the four freedoms. And as Samuel Grafton, then a columnist for the New York Post when it was a liberal newspaper, said there, and there were also quite a few Southern Democrats who sat on their hands as well. Because let's consider what that means. Freedom of speech and expression, which is part of the First Amendment, part of our very First Amendment, the Bill of Rights. Freedom of speech and expression was the idea as we know it as our right to speak and to speak our minds. And some people thought that had already been accomplished, but obviously for great numbers of people, that was hardly the case. Second, freedom of worship. Now, there's no doubt that America stood for freedom of worship in many ways, but there were, of course, those who still felt persecuted by angry right-wing mobs in Boston and in Brooklyn. And I'm speaking especially of older Jewish folks and Jewish children. So that was important. And then he moved, had said freedom from want. And that really did scare the Republicans because they figured he had in mind expanding Social Security to include such things as national health care.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then freedom from fear. And of course, African Americans in particular heard those words and imagined that Roosevelt would in time actually address the Jim Crow South and the brutality of race relations that existed there. Now, it's interesting also, just so I'll note before we move on to the contemporary day, that in the course of World War II, Roosevelt continued to repeat those four freedoms, and it became basically the manifesto for the American war effort. And in 1943 and 1944, there were surveys commissioned asking Americans what it was that they wanted. What did they want after the war? You know, what did they want America to pursue? And it turned out that 85% of Americans, when asked, really did want what was implied by what we would call, you know, freedom from want and freedom from fear. They wanted to expand Social Security to include national health care. They wanted to guarantee students at high school and college level the capacity to gain an education. They wanted, in essence, to assure housing and all of the other things that we would take as part of the American idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the good life. So Roosevelt gave a speech, once again, a State of the Union address in January 1944. And in that speech, he lays out an economic bill of rights, a second bill of rights. He basically says, you know, we've come to that point in American life where we realize necessitous men, needy men and women are not free men and women. And as a consequence, it's essential for us now to move towards enacting a second bill of rights. And of course, we haven't seen the second bill of rights enacted, but we shouldn't forget that in the course of the 1960s, we made great strides as part of the Great Society towards enacting them. So we had, for example, the implementation of Medicare and Medicaid. We had a generation live up to the promise of freedom from fear by enacting civil rights and voting rights. We had the radical transformation in the immigration laws in the United States and moving very much in the direction of freedom from want and fear. But in a new direction, we enacted environmental protection laws, occupational safety and health laws, and also a Consumer Product Safety Commission kinds of things. So, you know, it was a remarkable generation from the 30s to the 60s inspired by Franklin Roosevelt's Four Freedoms.
And it is obviously a deliberate attempt of Hillary Clinton and her campaign to position herself in the light of FDR by holding this event at Four Freedoms Park. She has said in her book, as well as in previous interviews and questions, that she identifies very strongly with his wife, Eleanor Roosevelt, and her work on civil rights and human rights around the world. So there's a lot to break down here. I know we only have you for a few segments, but hopefully we can get through a bit of it and let people get their own perspective. Does that sound okay with you, Harvey?
That sounds okay. I just want to say something else.
Sure.
The park itself opened in October 2012, and it's a great park.
It's
on
beautiful.
Roosevelt Island.
Yeah.
If anyone can get out there, not necessarily for Hillary's event, but if you get to New York, get to Four Freedoms Park.
Go check it out. We will be back with more Harvey Kaye right after this. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Danielle and Chano filling in for Tom today. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What would you like to hear out of Hillary's speech tomorrow, and how does that relate to FDR? Back with more after this. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. We are still joined by the one and only Harvey Kaye, Professor of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay and the author of The Fight for the Four Freedoms, What Made FDR and the Greatest Generation Truly Great. Harvey, thank you for sticking with us.
That's a pleasure. You know, as I said earlier, I mean, this is the kind of subject I could go on. In fact, I did just go on at length, as you heard. So you can depend on me for as long as you need me today. I'm happy to do this.
We love hearing from you. And I thought you were uniquely qualified to answer my curiosity on one question. Hillary gets a lot of criticism for her connections with Wall Street, the fact that she has a lot of money in the coffers. But based on my understanding, that is actually very similar to the background of FDR himself, that he wasn't always this symbol of the Four Freedoms and the, you know, American working families. Am I missing something there in that connection?
Well, Roosevelt was always a proud Democrat, capital D Democrat. And in fact, his sympathies were always with the question of how to improve working people's lives. You know, as early as 1912, during what we think of as the Gilded Age and politically the progressive era, Roosevelt gave a speech in which he really was trying to figure out how to cultivate an alternative to free markets and hyper-individualism. He was trying to say, how can we uplift communities? And this was, he didn't have it clear. I mean, he hadn't worked it out yet, but you could see in this early speech his endeavor to do that. Also, during World War I, when he was the Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Woodrow Wilson, he actually gave at least one speech, and this is going to surprise people. I only came across this recently in reading a new book on his early years, in which he actually gave a speech in which he basically referred to the inequality in America in terms of the 1% and the 99%. How's that for a surprise? So, I mean, he was attuned to this. And in the 1920s, when he was battling polio and trying to – he never fully recovered, but where he was doing his best to transcend, to rise above it, he gave a talk up at Milton Academy in Boston titled Wither America. And he warned that he worried – that if the nation remained governed by conservatives for too long, that the nation might lose its original meaning. It's, in other words, wither America. Where is America going, basically? And then in 1931, in the midst of the Great Depression, before he had announced anything about – he was governor of New York and he had not announced for the presidency. He actually said, as he looked around the United States in the midst of the Depression, he said, what we need to do is to make America fairly radical for a generation. So he already had the small p, as well as capital P earlier on, progressive instincts and aspirations. And I think that when he took on the presidency, he had a pretty good idea of the kinds of things he was going to pursue. And of course, having had the opportunity to mobilize labor in behalf of his campaign, he also found himself propelled by labor and the progressive groups and turned a generation really into the most progressive generation in American history. Now, let me just say, to make it clear to everyone listening, that I support Bernie Sanders in these primary campaigns. I mean, that's important for me to make clear. But I also want to say that I think the fact that Hillary Clinton's trying to embrace the Four Freedoms, it's a political act. But if it helps remind Americans of the Four Freedoms, then so much the better.
It's absolutely a good thing. We'll be back with more Harvey Kaye right after this. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, filling in for Tom today, and we are still joined by the one and only Harvey Kaye, Professor of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, and the author of The Fight for the Four Freedoms, What Made FDR and the Greatest Generation Truly Great. Hillary is giving her big announcement tomorrow at Four Freedoms Park in New York, obviously named after FDR's Four Freedoms. And I feel like we need to give her credit where credit is due, that she's already come out in favor of ending mass incarceration, enhancing executive action on immigration, expanding voting rights, as well as several other what I would call progressive proposals. Do you think, Harvey, that those are in line with the Four Freedoms? Is there still a lot that she could do to express
that? Here's the thing. I mean, the thing about the Four Freedoms is that when Roosevelt proposed the Four Freedoms, it was a vision and a promise of a generation. And I think Hillary, in her own fashion, I believe Hillary's a liberal. I actually do. I think she's more liberal than Bill Clinton. And I think in some ways that if she can get herself out of the shadow of Bill Clinton, we might find an extraordinary progressive somewhere there. But Meanwhile, here's what we if I can shift the question a little bit,
sure,
Danielle.
Absolutely.
I think the question I think that we really need to ask ourselves is this. You know, we've heard – again, I support Bernie Sanders, and I believe when Bernie speaks about what we need to do, we know we've got a progressive that we're hearing. And what makes him a progressive is not simply the things that he ticks off that we need to do, all of which are progressive. But he talks about a political revolution. He makes it clear that running for the presidency doesn't mean that we're supposed to vote for him and then give up on basically our own actions. He knows that he needs to mobilize Americans. I believe that Bernie Sanders is the closest thing we right now have to the redemption of a Roosevelt vision. So here's what I would recommend people do. If they're going to watch or listen or read Hillary Clinton's speech on Saturday, listen for this. Don't listen for what she tells you she's going to do for us. All politicians tell you what they're going to do for us. Listen to how much she encourages us to fight for progressive causes. In other words, if she gets up there and says, I want to be your champion, and here's what I want to do, all well and good, but we've heard that before. I mean, Barack Obama did a great job of that, right? But listen to whether or not she understands that a real Roosevelt politician – that the real Roosevelt politician wants to encourage us, wants to mobilize us, wants to empower us, basically to fight for the very things that he or she proposes, and that we therefore need to pursue and push our president to do.
I think
okay?
That's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a great take on it. I want to quickly remind everybody, we're speaking with Harvey Kay, professor of democracy and justice study, author of The Fight for the Four Freedoms. I commend her for taking this chance on the Four Freedoms Park. This, I think, is a risky move politically. She can be criticized from some of us on the left for not agreeing with and supporting the Four Freedoms ideals as well as we would like her to. And she can be attacked from many on the right for linking herself to FDR and quote unquote big government. I mean, I think it does take some bravery to stand out on this line and, you know, put yourself in some mighty big shoes to fill with FDR's. What do you say to that, Harvey?
Yeah, it's a great location.
Let's think, it's beautiful.
If we think about the politics of it, to stand there as a tremendously, you know, handsome bust of Franklin Roosevelt. There's the New York Harbor off in the distance. The United Nations will be off to the, if people are watching, I assume will be off to the right-hand side. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous vista that'll be there. But she's basically saying, I want to be Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt. That's what she's saying she wants to be. That's brave, and yet it's also the case, you know, it's like we talk about cheap patriotism is to wrap yourself in the flag. Well, let's hope it's not cheap. It's not a cheap antic where she just wants to wrap herself in Franklin Roosevelt's, you know, heritage, you know, his memory and legacy, and then go on and act in the same fashion that we've seen the Obama administration all too often pursue politics. And clearly, let's not forget, the Clinton administration was a betrayal of the Franklin Roosevelt legacy.
Yeah.
Okay. They put North American Free Trade Act first. They did not at all listen to the demands of the labor movement that basically we're talking about democratizing America and fighting the inequality that prevailed. And then they turned around and Bill Clinton signed off on the end of aid to families with dependent children, the end of welfare, as we know what they called it. I mean, that was a betrayal of the Roosevelt legacy. And let's hope that maybe, you know, I know we're probably going to run out of time soon. If you need me for a bit longer, there's a little story I can tell that maybe they would give us a little bit of hope for Hillary. But we can always do it another time if you'd like.
Yeah, we only have about 2 minutes left, and I have a whole board full of calls waiting to get in on this topic. But, you know,
Do I get to join in the answers? Or are you guys going to handle that?
Well, I don't know what they're all specifically calling about just at the moment. But if you would like to take a call or so with us, let's see what we have at the moment. Do you want to take one call? Do we have time, Shane? We have a minute and a half, so we'll take one really quickly with Robert in Bullhead, Arizona. Robert, really quickly, you have a question for Harvey Kay?
Yes, I understand that he is looking at Bernie Sanders as for president as well. Now, my whole thing is, if the American voter does not get around Bernie Sanders and vote for the people, that are going to actually be the senators and the congressmen.
Okay, so how do we get them out? Robert, I don't mean to cut you off. We only have about a minute. How do we get voters to choose the state and local candidates that would support Bernie? That's the question for you, Harvey.
Well, that's a good question, and I can't speak on behalf of all the states in the nation, but I can tell you this. In 2016, we're finally going to have a candidate worth voting for again in Wisconsin, and that's Russ Feingold. And I'm sure that those of us who intend to vote for Bernie Sanders will have no difficulty in wrapping our arms around the candidacy of Russ Feingold. So I recommend to people across the nation to find your most progressive candidates and back them, because 2016 is a critical year, and more important than that, the United States is in a critical moment in its history.
Harvey,
how's that?
You are awesome. You are the leading voice on this, and I'll be taking my cues from you on the speech tomorrow. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. I look forward to our next occasion.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. Harvey Kay, everyone.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
What would you like to hear tomorrow from Hillary? 202-536-3270. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shane. In for Tom today. Tom is at Talkers up in New York City. On a panel discussion and
it's the annual event
representing, you know, the Tom Hartman Program and all the amazing work that he does there. So he will be back with you Monday.
But he's going to be with us. He's going to call in.
Yes.
He's going to talk. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was so funny. Tom is so nice.
Yes.
I mean, everyone knows that from listening to the show, how nice Tom is.
Yes.
But it's his show. He wanted to come on and asked us permission. And I was like, it's your show.
Do you mind
show.
If I call into the show?
Is it okay if I call into the show today?
He's like, it's your show?
Yeah. You can call in for all 3 hours and do it from there.
Exactly.
It's
your
show.
The listeners would love that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And big thanks to Harvey Kay. You know, he knows his stuff when it comes to FDR and the Four Freedoms. And there is a lot to think about and discuss with Hillary giving her announcement from that location. It is a beautiful park, if anybody hasn't seen pictures. It's very...
You mentioned that it kind of looked a lot like the National Mall.
Yeah, it does.
That, you know...
I mean, a much smaller scale.
Sure.
But it has
It's kind of like Disney World and Disneyland.
Right. It has that that feel.
The majestic feel. And
yes.
Presidential, yes. Dare I say. And,
yes.
You know, so, optics, you know, it really can affect, when you're watching a speech, you know, how you take in the words you're hearing, how they look.
I am open to hearing how she considers herself like FDR, you know, why she's making that connection. She has said on many occasions in the past that she felt a connection with Eleanor Roosevelt. And I can certainly see that with her work on mm-hmm. civil rights and human rights around the world.
And healthcare.
But there is a lot of similarities between her and FDR that people perhaps don't realize, that FDR, as a governor of New York, you know, came from money, and he was still able to... He was a rich guy.
He was a governor,
but
he was a rich guy.
He was still able to understand the needs of the average person.
Right. And you know, in his speeches, I've gone back and read them. I understand he was always for the worker and always
right.
for extending, you know, the benefits of our economy and our society to more people, to broadening that out. So that is progressive. That is, you know, capital D Democrat. But a lot of the planks and a lot of things he spoke about in his first election. So before he was president, you know, comparing FDR at the same point that Hillary is now in her career, you know, running for the presidency. In a lot of ways, Hillary may be more FDR than FDR was. I know that sounds strange because he was talking about shrinking government, getting rid of duplication. He thought the government was too big and that the taxpayers were paying too much. He was talking about local solutions. There's a line in one of the speeches, unfortunately, I pulled it down, about how you can't just spend and spend and spend and everyone's all of a sudden going to have a job.
Yeah, but, you know.
Then he went into hiring wages so that there's more demand.
But
so,
he also recognized the need to... you know, create economic security here at home. He's often pointed as, you know, the president that dealt with some huge wars and solved foreign policy issues. But he recognized, I'm trying to look for the quote in front of me, he recognized that had to be done after security was dealt with here in terms of our nation, our American family.
An insecure nation can't effectively fight on the world stage if necessary,
right.
if you're called to do so in terms of fighting fascism as,
right.
as we did back then.
Anyhow.
And, of course, TPP today. That's what
TPP is the big news.
And if anybody's interested, it's really cool. Steny Hoyer, the Democratic whip
yes.
in the House, they announced today they have a new app out. And I have that out in front of me, actually. I'm watching C-SPAN here, have the app here. It's called Whip Watch. It's free. And for the wonks out there who are the C-SPAN watchers like I am, it actually breaks down what's going on, what the scheduling is. He updates it. For example, when the president went up to the Hill today to lobby Democrats to vote for Trade Promotion Authority. The whip's office updated the app to say, okay, the House is now adjourned. The Democratic caucus is meeting with the president. We'll be back in, you know, everything that's going on.
Right.
It's really cool.
Yes.
So we'll be updating you as that goes along. And Tom's going to talk about that, too.
And, of course, it is Anything Goes Friday, as always, here on the Tom Hartman program. And lots of other surprises going on that we'll get to as they come up. But it is Anything Goes. So give us a call, 202-536-3270. We already have quite a few people on the line, and I would like to check in with Jill in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, listening on Sirius. Jill, what are your thoughts on Hillary's For Freedom speech tomorrow?
Hi. Thanks for putting me on the air, Danielle.
Of course.
Hey, I think it's great that she is doing it at the For Freedoms Park, and I love the symbolism and everything. I just want her to talk more about the future and about what she can do for us going forward. I think that's how you win an election. I think that's what people want to hear more about the future than about going back to the past.
Yeah,
you
even
know,
the present.
I love what FDR represents, you know?
Yeah, even the present, Jill. Today, of all days, she has an opportunity to, you know, take a bold stand and come out against TPP as Bernie Sanders has done. You know, I would welcome her quote-unquote leadership, you know, for lack of a less politicized term, on this issue right now.
That's right. And I just wanted to say really quick, in regards to Hillary talking about the TPP and Bernie Sanders, Bernie is great, and he has access to reading it, although I know I'm aware he can't talk about it, you know, and it's difficult and all kind to read and all kinds of things like that. But Hillary does not have access to it, and so I think we should just all remember that she, you know, doesn't really know what's all in it to talk about.
I believe that the negotiations started when Hillary Clinton was still Secretary of State.
They started before, but continued during.
I think she had an opportunity, at least in one state or another, to read and review that agreement.
And not to pile on.
Right.
But I'm actually not asking anyone, even Democrats at this point, to take a position on TPP.
Yeah, let's
take
just
a position on Trade Promotion Authority. Do you think, as a candidate for the presidency, that it is okay to essentially tie the hands of Congress to put through on a 51% vote a trade deal, which is actually a treaty in contradiction of the Constitution? Of course, you don't want to ask the question that's loaded, but are you in favor or not of TPA?
Yeah.
And don't worry about TPP. We'll deal with TPP later, but TPA.
Yeah, I mean, she has the opportunity to come out, even if she supports it, at least explain why. I think that is a fair request, and I think it's something that, you know, FDR would have a bold stance on. Whatever his opinion was, I think he would own it.
I don't know.
I can't speak for him, but, you know, Jill, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was just wondering what you think FDR would say about the TPA.
Well, here, let me see if I can find this quote here. Channeling Tom here of digging through an article while I keep you on hold. There's a great post over at Vox.com that talks about her speech and the FDR For Freedoms Park and goes through what some of his positions were back at the time, and of course, here, okay. America's own right, this is a quote from Roosevelt. America's own rightful place in the world depends in large part upon how fully these and similar rights, referring to the Four Freedoms and his second Bill of Rights, the Economic Bill of Rights, depends in a large part upon how fully these and similar rights have been carried into practice for our citizens. For unless there is security at home, there cannot be lasting peace in the world. That, you know, these trade agreements are great. They can create peace among both economic and security-wise among many nations, but it all means nothing if our citizens have to pay the cost of it, that their jobs have to disappear, their financial security has to disappear. I would like to believe that he would be against any legislation, any trade agreement that jeopardizes American jobs.
Interestingly, though,
am I wrong?
No. He definitely wrote, you know, if you look in his book Looking Forward about this and how it affects the common person. But when he ran for president, he claimed that the Hawley Smoot tariff, which is protectionism, trade protectionism, that increased tariffs, was the cause of the Great Depression.
Oh, so hey.
So, you know, it's hard to predict. I mean, he's, of course, not here to ask. But,
right.
You know, running for president, he thought that trade protectionism hurt and caused the Depression.
Yeah. Interesting point there, Shane. Jill, I think that probably muddled your question instead of answering it. But that's our thoughts on it, if it helped.
Yeah. No, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Take care. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you. You too. Let's check in really quickly with Dennis in Sunrise, Florida. Dennis, you had some thoughts on Hillary as well. Is it Dennis listening on WCPT.com?
Uh-oh.
Going once? Going twice?
Hello?
Oh, there you are.
Hello?
Yep. Can you hear us?
Yes, ma'am. Let me put my window up here.
Okay, go ahead. We only have about a minute.
I just wanted to say that I support Hillary Clinton. I don't have anything against Mr. Sanders, but I don't think he can win the election in the general election. And that, you know, Bill Clinton appointed Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Stephen Breyer. And I think that the Democrats need to remember that the Supreme Court is the biggest risk that we have. And Hillary, I think, is the only candidate, and she it will be close, but I think Hillary is the best candidate, and she's the only one that can possibly win in 2016.
All right. Well, Dennis, I understand that sentiment. I've heard it from many people. We will have to agree to disagree. I think Bernie Sanders can win in a popular vote. I think he's got what it takes to get the support of the American people, regardless of political affiliation, behind him. But we'll have to wait and see, and that's what primaries are for. And hey, it would really be helpful to have some more debates on that subject, if you ask me. But thank you for the call, and thank you for listening there in Sunrise, Florida. We'll be back with more. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. What's on your mind? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. Let's check in with Michael in Imperial Beach, California, watching on DirecTV. Thank you, Michael. And want to quickly remind everybody that Free Speech is in their fund drive, as well as lots of your local stations. So please support them and help keep, you know, good independent media on the air. Michael, go ahead. Sorry.
Hey, Danielle, Shana, Lori, and Jim. Okay, Anything Goes Friday.
That's right.
Previously, I stated a fact to Tom at an earlier conversation. I was wrong. I said $18.2 billion. Now you, as a woman, the richest woman in the world, is Christy Ruth Talent, who married John Walton, who died in an experimental aircraft accident in 2005. She's actually worth $41.7 billion. So I just wanted to correct myself. What do you think?
I think it's good of you to correct yourself. I think when you're talking about billions, it's so far beyond what anybody, you know, any of us can even imagine. There's obviously a huge difference between $41 billion and $18 billion, but I think when you're even starting with the B, you're so out of the realm that most people can relate. This is that that really strange story you told Tom about the heir to the Walton fortune. Am I remembering that correctly?
Correct.
And about the woman who maintains the majority of that fortune, right?
Well, all I'm saying is that I just find it odd that a person can marry into a family who basically no one knows anything about is now the richest woman on the planet. That's wild, man.
It's certainly makes me scratch my head. But good on you, Michael, for correcting a previous mistake. I don't know that anybody would have noticed, but it shows integrity on your part. And one of the reasons we always enjoy speaking with you. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Danielle.
All right. Let's check in with Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Charles, how's it going today?
Oh, it's going beautiful. Nice sunny day. You know, no rain. So I hope everyone else in across the country is enjoying something like this.
Okay.
That's all I can
say. It's pretty hot here, I got to say. It's well over 95 degrees, and it's about 90 in this studio under the lights.
Right, but I just wanted to say to Kenyatta in California, to Jesse in Miami, to Corky in New York, and John in Minneapolis, I'm behind Bernie all of the way now. But one thing that I would like to ask Bernie, one question that I would want Bernie to answer in general is, I think the retirement age is, you know, at 65 is way overdue to be changed. And I don't think we should go to 67. I actually think 61 or 62.
So you think it should be lower, not higher?
Lower. Exactly. I think it should be.
And, I certainly can't speak for Bernie, but I agree with you, Charles, and I think it would help the unemployment situation, because if you got people, if people in those few years were able to retire and leave the job force, the workforce, that would open up positions for younger, lower paid workers, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
And let's not forget FDR.
Yeah.
The way he changed things was also by executive order.
Yeah, Charles, I'll take it. Any executive order. I'm sorry, we're out of time. But thank you for spending time with us there in Opa-locka, Florida. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, in for Tom today. Tom is at Talkers. He'll be back with you Monday, and he may even call into his show in a few minutes, so
yay.
You don't want to miss that. TPP, TPA, Fast Track.
TAA.
TAA.
Which is actually the big deal.
Yes.
The big giant deal that they could throw everything out the window.
Right. TAA, the Trade Adjustment Assistance. The vote, do you want to explain real quickly?
Sure.
You did a lot of research on this morning about how this.
And I looked at it at Whip Watch on my app, too, because all the text is there. But
you just like saying that.
I do. It's like Whip. Cool Whip. So the TAA is part of the TPA, the Trade Promotion Authority. And what the TAA does, and we've already have a TAA for all the other trade deals, and what it does is it assumes that there's going to be a certain number of workers that are put out of work because of our trade deals. Which is an amazing premise to start with, saying we're enacting a bill that we know is going to lose jobs. So here's our job killing bill, and the TAA funds different types of services, educational, job training to help people who've lost their job as a result of these trade deals to get a new job. Now, what has happened in this one is as the Republicans have realized we have a Democrat in the White House who wants this trade deal. We're going to put in all our Republican goodies in here. We're going to overreach. So the way that they funded the increase in the TAA this time around was to take $700 million out of Medicare. There's been a revolt over that. As it came to light, the Democrats are like, we're not doing that. So the question is, are they going to be able to change the TAA enough to get Democrats to vote for it? Because if TAA doesn't pass, TPA will not pass.
Yep.
So there's a couple of votes going on today. First, they're debating as we speak right now, but according to Whip Watch, they'll first vote on TAA, then get to TPP. If they don't both pass, neither pass.
And for anybody who wants, you know, more information on each of these specific bills and how they interrelate and how they play into the TPP vote as a whole, there's a great just, you know, straight down the line list over at commondreams.org, a look at the trade votes that will happen today in the House. And it goes through the customs bill, the trade adjustment assistance program Shane was just talking about, fast track, et cetera. And it just breaks them down and explains how they're all related. And
according to C-SPAN, the votes started around 1.
Right.
So call now.
Call now.
202 would be the time.
225-3121 or 202-224-3121.
Interestingly, and on the rule, there was for every this is I don't want to get too wonkish here, but for every vote that's taken in the House, there's a rule first, and you vote on the rule. And the rule says this is how we're going to debate this bill, and this is how we're going to vote on this bill, what order and how many minutes and blah, blah, blah. That rule was passed yesterday. 8 Democrats joined the Republicans. All but 8 of the Democrats joined. And there were 34 Republicans who wouldn't vote for the rule. Now, I've heard, and this is just, you know, through journalists, that in order to get TPA, the president needs something like 20 Democrats or so, and he has 19 or 18 or 17. The numbers always move. But if only 8 went for the rule, then the TAA part of it, which was part of this rule, could be the thing that's in jeopardy, and that's what they're saying. That's the nail biter.
Right, and if the House does not pass this assistance program and the fast track, which is the easier, more recognizable names for TAA and TPA, then this goes back to the Senate. Then the TPA fast track doesn't pass.
They're not going to stop trying.
Right.
But this round, you know, they've only got to be right once. We've got to be right every time.
Right. And can I just say that this is a perfect example of D.C. inside baseball politics?
Wow, yeah.
Because this is being discussed in the media, you know, in various outlets, and it keeps coming across my desk with phrases like the president needs to convince Democrats to back a measure known as the trade adjustment assistance that would provide aid and retraining to workers who lose their jobs due to trade agreements. Well, while that is partially true,
the reason they oppose it right now is it's coming out of Medicare and it's not enough money.
Right.
But the way they wrote that makes it sound like Democrats aren't in favor of training people who've lost their jobs.
Right. And it makes it sound like the Republicans have this great idea to protect workers who are going to lose their jobs from trade, and Democrats are blocking it. And this is just the perfect example of messaging in D.C. and how muddied the waters get. This is clear. Democrats say, hey, we'll give you trade promotion authority if you protect workers, but you're not going to take seniors' health care to protect workers.
And we want more help for workers.
But yet this comes across as Democrats don't want to protect workers.
It's
this
amazing.
Is just so frustrating to me. It's something that we come across quite often in the work that we do. So just my vent
there.
Agree. But again, if you want to weigh in and tell Congress not to vote for TPA
just,
or
the word of the day is no.
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 No. No matter what. No.
No.
202-225-3121, 224-3121 works as well.
Got time for one call.
One call. Okay, really quickly, let's check in with David listening on WHMP in Springfield, Massachusetts. Thank you for listening today, David.
I want to talk about subsidies given to private corporations that have no right morally or should be legally to receive these subsidies.
Amen. We only have a very short time, so make your point.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about it. The subsidies given to the tobacco corporations, which produce cancer-causing substances in the body. We should not subsidize tobacco, and we should not permit tobacco to be imported from other countries so as to keep the price down. And we should not subsidize sugar, which is a bad product causing sugar diabetes and other injuries to the body. No form of sugar should be subsidized. And I want to talk about not subsidizing, using the money to subsidize something like corn, which is used to produce a low-quality, bad food item for the body called high-fructose corn syrup. These subsidies keep the price of these products down, and we want these products to increase in price. We want them to cost more, so that the public will buy less of these bad products, which are not good for the human body.
Well, while you're on that list, why don't we add oil to it and fossil fuels that we subsidize to astronomical levels?
Well, I mean, I'm agreeing with you on that.
Yeah.
But I want to get back to this thing on imported tobacco. They import tobacco in this country to keep the price down. I think it's wrong.
Okay, I think it's wrong to, subsidize products that harm people. And, if they're going to subsidize an industry like tobacco, I bet you there's some marijuana growers who would like some subsidies. Thank you very much.
Honestly, the thing that surprised me most about that call is I didn't even know they were still subsidizing tobacco, to be honest with you.
I don't know. Obviously, we're taking that from David in Massachusetts. Thank you for the call, David. But I agree with his point. Very much so. Thanks.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano in for Tom today. Tom is at the Talkers Convention in New York City. He is on a panel there and possibly, do we have Tom? No? Not yet? Okay. We're getting him on the phone. We're going to be talking to Tom from Talkers about
the TPP.
The TPP.
It's so alliterative. I like it.
It is. It is. Lots of news outlets focused on the current debate, the upcoming vote.
And they're focused on escapees in New York. That's what I'm seeing more than anything.
Oh,
that's why I had
it
on C-SPAN.
And on C-SPAN, you were just watching.
I was watching Nancy Pelosi, who I'm not going to try to characterize her entire speech because she's still speaking and I didn't hear all of it, but she was talking about slowing things down. Now, if she's talking about slowing things down, that would be the antithesis of fast track. So
yeah. So apparently we need slow track.
Well, yes. That's better than fast track.
It is. And currently they are discussing the Trade Adjustment Assistance Program, which would provide aid and retraining to workers who will inevitably lose their jobs because of the TPP. Anything? No. Okay. All right. Lots of other stuff in the news. So it is Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Feel free to give us a call at 202-536-3270. Lots and lots of topics in the news today. There was one from yesterday that I wanted to get to, and we just ran out of time. But for anybody who may have missed this, it looks like there is a little war going on between the Koch brothers and the Republican Party. This is an amazing story. I think this is from Salon that Shane printed here, from John Ward, senior political consultant. And essentially, the Koch brothers own the Republican Party's data. And for anybody who knows about politics, knows about corralling votes, this is a really, really big deal. The Kochs have a program called i360, which is not a new Apple product. It is actually a database containing information on voters and politics that the RNC used during the midterm elections. However, the RNC has their own program, and the two are duking it out as far as which program they will go with. I am closing my phone system there. You let me know, guys. They're having issues with our phone system. But back to this story. The fight between the RNC's chairman, Rince Priebus, and political operatives of Charles and David Koch is really interesting here, that there is a treasure trove of data that the Kochs control, and the RNC is pretty nervous about it. Essentially, it looks like there is a dispute about which program. Shane, we're talking about this Koch brothers and RNC story.
Oh, this is awesome. I love this story.
Yes.
We had this yesterday. We teased it, but never actually got to it.
Yes. This is Salon. You got this from Salon.com?
No, actually, it was Yahoo, of all places.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, they've been doing some cool investigative reporting.
Yes, but to summarize, essentially, the Kochs have a monopoly on Republican voters' data.
Right.
And it is such an awesome, just perfect analogy for their own free market talking points.
Right.
Because the Kochs have a better product, and so they've managed to push competitors, which include the RNC's data program themselves, out of the market. Well, the RNC doesn't like that too much.
No, well, they had a partnership
the
last election, and that's when they got all the information and said, oh, we're not going to renew that partnership. This is ours.
It's ours.
It's like they're taking over the Republican Party.
Right.
And they're very upset. And the problem is that because they have this better product, the Congress people, the Republicans, are going to the Kochs instead of the RNC.
Right.
Making the RNC essentially obsolete technologically.
And while the RNC, Rince Priebus, is completely upset about this, direct quote from the article here, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and House Speaker John Boehner have been reluctant to conclude that I-360 represents a threat to the party. In other words, they know which side their bread is buttered on, and they are not about to come out against the Koch brothers.
Well, I think also the RNC is asking for money from the Senate campaign committees and the House to help them fight this and to make their product better. So when their hand is out, like, no, we're going to take the free stuff over here.
Yeah, so they
plus the $900 billion they want to put in.
They essentially want to sink money into a product that doesn't work very well so that they can try and compete with
Right.
The free market model of the Koch brothers?
Sure. They want a subsidy.
Are you sure they're not talking about Amtrak?
I don't know. You should have Tom now.
Oh, we should have Tom now? Let me reopen the software here. Live radio. Live radio, as always. And we have a special surprise guest in the studio who's just going to make everybody's day in just a moment, as soon as we can get the one and only Tom on the phone, if we can, maybe.
His own show is conspiring against him.
It is pretty laughable at this point. It is the heat. It's 95 degrees in here, and I think the equipment is going a little haywire. Let's see here. Do we have Tom? I do not see Tom on the board.
You should.
No. Nope. So we'll figure that out in just a moment.
Oh, software's still being paid.
Software's still. Okay. So we'll go back to this. Anyhow, this product from the Koch brothers, i360, essentially controls the data that links voters and their voting records, all of the stuff that the RNC uses to direct how it's going to fund candidates. Oh, do we have Tom Hartman now on his own show? Going once, going twice, live radio. Tom, I can hear you now.
Eureka!
I'm just glad that you've sat in this chair and have sympathy for what was going on just now.
Oh, boy, do I have sympathy.
So how's it going? Tom Hartman calling into his own show. You couldn't stay away from the microphone for 2 days.
No, I couldn't. I'm here in New York at the Talkers Convention. And, but I woke up this morning. Well, actually last night on TV, Curtis Ellis was going through the studio and I said hi. And he's the guy who runs the Obamatrade.com website. And I discovered that he used to do fill in for me when I was on IE America Radio 13 years ago.
Wow.
Which is a whole nother amazing story. But anyhow, he gave me this list, which I forwarded to you guys of the eight Democrats who facilitated the rule yesterday that was necessary to allow a vote on fast track TPA today. And among them was Earl Blumenauer. He used to be a regular on my show when I was in Portland.
Yes.
And I always thought he was a wonderful guy, but I'm just astonished. I called his office this morning and I said, if he continues to do this, I will do everything I can to primary him. And the woman said, thank you very much. And I said, you don't want my name, you have information. I am actually, a property owner in Oregon, and I am. And she said, nope. And so I called Carl Wolfson's show, on X-Ray FM in Portland. And Carl and I had a nice conversation about that. And, this is what happened in 93. There were 30 some odd Democrats who went along with all the Republicans and Bill Clinton and pushed NAFTA. And about half of them lost their seats the next time around. And because of NAFTA. And that's why Newt Gingrich took the House. And it's going to happen all over again, although, interestingly, it may happen to the Republicans. We'll see. But whatever it is, if any of these guys do this, I will support primary challengers. I'm not sure I can commit financially, but I will support them in any other way I can.
Yeah.
And to any of these guys, I'm just astonished that we've got Democrats who are, and Ron Wyden and Earl Blumenauer co-authoring an op-ed piece for the Oregonian, pitching this. Sean was telling me this morning it's all pro TPP all the time advertising in the Pacific Northwest. There will be more jobs because of the TPP in the Pacific Northwest, because there'll be more ships coming in with cheap stuff from Vietnam to unload. But those are not the kind of jobs we need.
Yeah, certainly not. Tom, do you want to stay through the Free Speech TV break and continue thought?
I've said largely what I had to say, but it's up to you. If you'd like me to, I'd be glad to.
All right.
That's fine.
Tom Hartman on his own program. Just a few more minutes of it. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is Anything Goes Friday on the Tom Hartman Program, 202-536-3270. Give us a call. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program on Free Speech TV. Tom, as it is the fun drive, I just wanted you to stick around for one more minute to remind everybody to support Free Speech TV and that it's the only network where you're going to hear Tom Hartman railing against the TPP.
Right. And also, you know, our non-commercial FM yes. stations, our Pacifica stations are listening right now also, and some of them are in fundraising drive mode too. So if you're listening on a local radio station, help them out also. But yes.
Well, thank you very much,
so,
Tom.
So what are you hearing? I've been at this conference. I haven't, but I heard that the vote was going to happen, and now the vote hasn't happened. And I just checked the New York Times, and you know,
As of this morning, when we were putting the show together, the vote was supposed to happen today. But then Nancy Pelosi was just on the floor of the House saying we need to slow the whole process down. So I think it's up in the air as to, you know, maybe they're getting an overwhelming amount of pushback, or maybe Republicans are refusing to budge on the $700
from Medicare. I think more than anything, her talking about slowing it down was saying that she wasn't going to personally endorse the TAA, which is the thing that's in the way of getting the TPA. Because right now they're still debating this. And on C-SPAN, it says votes on trade bills shortly. Now, they're supposed to be starting around 1. I think that the president going up to the Hill to meet with the Democrats to push them, put things back in terms of their scheduling. So, but it should be coming. We probably will get votes during this show.
Yes.
Amazing.
It is.
Amazing.
It really is. And I think that Democrats who are being, you know, essentially sold to by the administration, you know, promising that they are going to get support when the inevitable backlash for this vote occurs, are fooling themselves, because I don't think the administration can provide cover for this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it is astonishing when the Drudge Report is talking of, I mean, literally one of the headlines on the Drudge Report right now is the Democrats to the rescue, or words to that effect. You know, Dems bravely fighting on for America or something like that. And they're talking about the majority of the Democrats. I mean, the fact of the matter is that this is something that the majority of the Republicans want, because they are absolute 100% corporate sellouts. And interestingly, there's a few Republicans who don't want it because they realize how unconstitutional it is. You know, they're the old fashioned Barry Goldwater Republicans. There's a few of them still left. Thank God, actually. I mean, it's a few principled people. But that these 8 Democrats last night and we had 13 in the Senate, including Ron Wyden.
And there were 34 Republicans who voted against that very rule that you're talking about, that the 8 Democrats voted for. So 34 Republicans joined the vast majority, 96% of the Democrats, in voting against that rule.
Right. And had those 8 Democrats not voted, and I, you know, you could argue that Earl Blumenauer cast the deciding vote, then we would not be having this discussion right now, because this vote wouldn't be happening. So
strange bedfellows. I think this is going to be a minute by minute watching the vote, seeing what happens, seeing what political alliances pan out. But interesting times we live in, Tom.
Well, now is the important time to be calling your member of Congress. I had to wait on hold almost 20 minutes when I called the congressional switchboard before they put me through to Blumenauer's office. I was about to hang up and, you know, Google his direct phone number. If you know the direct phone number for your member of the U.S. House of Representatives, don't call your senators, call your member of the House. That's where this is happening. But now is the time to give them a call. You got the phone number, Danielle?
Yep, 202-225-3121. Also, 224-3121 works as well. Thank you, Tom, for calling into your own show.
Thank you, Danielle. Thank you, Shana. You guys are doing great. Thank
Have
you,
a great time at Talkers. Tom Hartman, everybody, here on his own show, making a special appearance. We'll be back with more. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program, here where you just heard Tom Hartman on his own show. And joining us for one more segment before we get to our surprise guest that is going to just blow everybody away, our regular, our tradition, John Nichols, Washington correspondent of The Nation, who wrote a great piece today about the various groups who are out there working to oppose Fast Track. John, apparently I can't get enough of you. I have to speak to you every time I get the opportunity.
Well, I can't get enough of you, so it's totally appropriate. So I want to know who your surprise guest is. That's good. You know, I'm obviously not a surprise.
No, I think people should come to expect that I'm going to beg and plead and try desperately to have an opportunity to speak with you at every chance, every opportunity I get.
Well, you certainly don't have to do that, but I'm really intrigued by the special guest. I suspect it'll be, you know, fabulous.
It absolutely fabulous. No, but you wrote a great piece and sent it to the lovely Sean Taylor about Fast Track and the TPP and yet more groups and reasons why we need to be calling Congress at 202-225-3121 and telling them, heck no.
Well, thank you for spreading the word. And one of the things I wanted to do with this piece was to get away from some of the absurd personality politics that this has been wrapped up with and get to the reality of who's on what side of this thing. You know, not who as in person, but what interests are on each side. And there's too many people that, you know, are sort of obsessing with, you know, is this Obama's thing or are you for Obama or are you against him and things like that. This isn't about Obama. Every president wants fast track, okay? Why does every president want fast track? Because it makes things easy. It lets them, you know, cut a whole bunch of deals without ever consulting Congress.
Now, what do you say to the people, the talking point I keep hearing, and I'll be honest, I'm not familiar enough with negotiations, you know, that took place during NAFTA or other trade deals. What do you say to people who argue that without fast track, we would never get these trade agreements or agreements in general, that other nations wouldn't agree to them? Is there any truth to that?
There's a little truth, and I say fabulous.
Yeah, well, that makes two of us.
No, you know, I mean, I'm very blunt about this. I did cover NAFTA. I did cover China free trade. I've covered all these fights for a very, very long time. Here's the bottom line. They always lie about what these deals are going to do. Now, I don't mean that they lie even intentionally. They may lie to themselves. But at the end of the day, these deals never produce what you're told they're going to do. Now, the United States, one of the most powerful countries in the world, one of the most powerful military power, you know, forces in the world. It's one of the most powerful economic forces in the world. It's geographically incredibly well located between Europe and Asia. You know, we got all these things, right? And we can go into bilateral and multilateral trade negotiations in public, open, transparent trade relations, and we can ask for things and we can get things. That's just the truth. The lie is we have to do it all behind closed doors. What happens behind closed doors is not good for workers in the United States or abroad. It's not good for the environment. It's not good for farmers. It's not good for human rights. It's not good for democracy. What happens behind closed doors is good for multinational corporations that pay a lot of money so that they can create a race to the bottom that allows them to massively increase their profits at the expense of the rest of us.
Yeah.
So that's the important thing to understand. Now, again, I want to emphasize, this is not about individual presidents, because what we're proposing here, or what's being proposed here, this fast-track vote, this isn't just for Obama. This is for the next president, too. It's a multi-year fast-track, right?
Right.
So President Obama, if he gets a yes, you know, he can finish something, but then the next president gets to as well. And I cover trade policy. There's a lot more coming. It's a lot worse than even the TPP.
See, it's so hard to believe that because, I mean, how many agreements are we away from just one world agreement? And I said yesterday that, you know, we're giving the conspiracy theorists some credibility here because, you know, how much bigger can these deals get?
Well, they can get a lot bigger. It's not a conspiracy. This is just, you know, if you're a multinational corporation, you can set up a deal that allows you to do whatever you want. You're going to keep fighting for that forever. That's a given. That's not some complex or hard to understand thing, but there are proposals now in play being, you know, seriously discussed with all sorts of international players, that would go into the area of public services, you know, and whether you can protect your public services against outside corporations from another country coming in and saying, well, we don't like that you've got a national health care plan. We want to compete with that. Financial services regulation. These things really can be, you know, to a much greater extent than what we're talking about with TPP, be put in play. And there are discussions about doing just that. And so what you need to understand is that free trade never, ever stops. It's always ongoing. And the push for it. And so the next president will have proposals that are worse than what we're talking about now. And that doesn't mean it's a Democrat or a Republican. So what we need to understand is who's on which side of this thing? That's the heart of the matter. Who is consistently on which side? Consistently in the opposition to fast track, and frankly, the opposition to this free trade model, not in opposition to trade, strong supporter for fair trade, but in opposition to this sort of free trade model that is race to the bottom economics. Now, you got labor, you've got environmentalists, you've got progressive farm groups, you've got human rights groups, you've got community groups, you've got democracy advocates. They're in the opposition camp. Who is in favor of this? Well, the number one hardest working person on the floor of Congress right now advocating for fast track is Paul Ryan, the guy who advocated for, you know, ripping up Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. This is his biggest priority. You read the National Journal, you read any serious DC publication, they're going to tell you this is what Ryan is focused on. He is literally whipping this issue himself. And who else is on board? Alec, the American Legislative Exchange Council, working yeah. in states across this country.
That, in and of itself, should be a big red flag for us. John, thank you for putting this amazing piece together and for taking time for us today. Always appreciated.
Total pleasure. Take care.
John Nichols, Washington correspondent with The Nation.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And they are voting on TAA right now. We'll be back with that vote coming up next. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shane, in for Tom today, and we are joined by a very special guest, Mr. Hal Sparks, actor, comedian, host of the Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide.
Right, on WCPD Radio.
Yes, yeah. An amazing comedian, for anybody who doesn't know that. Who's been under a rock for
Seriously,
the last few years.
A rock sans comedy.
Yes. And you're in D.C. area.
Yeah.
Performing
at
this weekend.
Yeah, at the Arlington Cinema Draft House. I'm there tonight and tomorrow.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen a Hal Sparks comedy show, just leave now. Get in line.
Yeah, get ready. Yeah, get on a plane.
Tickets.
Wherever you're seeing this, wherever you're watching this, start making your pilgrimage now.
Yes.
Especially with DC traffic.
Yeah,
yes,
you're going to
exactly.
have to.
It might take you that long to get there anyway.
It's funny, but I tweeted what is effectively a logistical double entendre yesterday. It was like, you know, I said I'm going to DC, or as I like to call it, gridlock Virginia. Which works yeah. both in the political and mechanical sense.
I've never seen traffic like D.C. It is an extra kind of special. Yeah.
Well, it's one of the oldest cities adapting to one of the newest levels of life. I mean, if you really look at what D.C. is, it's technologically playing catch up while still trying to remain historic.
Yeah, and we're not just talking about Congress.
Yeah, right. Well, in Seattle, you know, is another city that's like super modern, super, you know, like got Google and other companies like that or whatever. They had the benefit of their entire city just washing into the Potomac or whatever,
It helps when you want to update the infrastructure. It's like the Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah, exactly. They built everything on mud. It just tilted and everything slid into the ocean.
Florida, welcome to your future.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, that's not true. Florida's not going to turn over and slide in. Thanks to global warming, it's going to raise water absolutely there, but it's going to raise it about 3 inches across the entire state. So as opposed to these giant, sort of sexy action movie, like, oh, my God, a giant tsunami is going to hit us, yeah. and we're all going to be survivors. You're just going to be squishing through a mosquito-infested swampland.
It's pretty much close to describing my childhood.
Yeah. It's just... Welcome to Florida.
By the way, updates, TAA going on right now.
Woohoo!
Yes.
And right now it's 96 yays, 135 nays.
All right.
So on the right track, we still have 203 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, it's supposed to end in about 2 minutes. But I think they're probably going to have to hold it open to get all those votes in. So
right.
we promised everyone during this break, but it may during the segment, as soon as it comes in, we'll let you know.
Mm-hmm. We are going to keep an eye on it.
Because if this goes down, it all goes down.
P.S., Pelosi may have been saying slow down to get people, to whip people to get a yes. That's not, you know, it's not necessarily that she was trying to slow the whole process of trade down. The weird part is I'm very torn on this because I think most of our negative reaction to it comes from a knee jerk based on NAFTA and GATT, which I completely understand. So it's kind of like being the first date of a person who's just been treated horribly in a relationship. And you're like, you know, no, let me pay for dinner. No, the last one paid for dinner. And look how that turned out. There's a bit of that.
a little bit of buyer's remorse going on, you know, writ large. And I have this feeling towards Obama and about Congress that I like the idea that he, as an individual, would have fast-track authority over those guys, because a lot of what they're okay with, I'm not okay with. So it's a very, you know, I'm one of those torn people on it based on that. The idea that it rolls over into the next president, the next trade dealer, is a little silly.
Just think President, you know, Huckabee with fast track.
Never heard that. Yeah. I only think President Huckabee if I'm watching a cartoon put out by the Heritage Foundation's Christian broadcasting arm.
Yeah. Well, you know,
because first of all, President Huckabee, never going to happen.
No.
Not ever.
No.
Never going to happen. Especially now that he's like the patron saint of child molesters and,
He came out in favor and defended the Duggars, right?
He defended Josh Duggar. Apparently, he let, go way back and have the, what was the guy, Dukakis got kind of.
Willie Horton?
Yeah, the Willie Horton idea is that he let him out and somebody killed him. Huckabee wrote a letter to a guy who was in jail for rape, and he got out and raped and murdered somebody else. Like, he literally wrote him a letter saying, it is my intention that you get out of jail, which is a little odd as governor. But anyways, that guy, and then it turns out that the guy who co-wrote his autobiography.
The God, Guns, Perry, and Bacon or something.
Yeah,
I don't remember what it is.
Yeah.
It's around here somewhere.
Grits, maybe?
Grits. That's it. I knew it was a breakfast food.
I think it was just his personal autobiography. Anyways, that guy, I want to say it's John Perry, something like that. His wife, one of the reasons why she divorced him, she put in there was allegations of child abuse and child molestation. So, and he stuck by that dude and wrote another book with him. So apparently that's his constituency. Apparently Huckabee is going for that least sought after child molester vote.
I guess that somebody's got to go for that vote.
I guess, yeah.
I guess.
It seems like an increasingly big vote.
It seems like.
But you think he'd be more internet savvy if that was
growing,
the case, because apparently that's where they.
If you got the Duggars, you might be able to take it a congressional district.
That's true.
There are enough of them.
That's true.
They are trying to make a congressional district from scratch.
They could gerrymander them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Duggar District number 5.
All right. It is Anything Goes Friday, and Hal Sparks is going to take calls with us.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting. Let's check in. We have Marty on the line. Marty, I don't know where you're calling from. Is this Marty in Evergreen Park, maybe?
This is, yeah.
How much I pay attention to the phone. We're doing great. Thank you, Marty. Listening on WCPT, by the way, so you probably listen to Hal's show.
When I can, yeah.
On Saturdays, 9 to 11 Pacific, and then 11, yeah.
You had some thoughts on Supreme Court.
Well, I wanted to chime in on Anything Goes and wish you guys all a very happy, loving day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a day that is very near and dear to my heart, but June 12th is the anniversary of the 1967 U.S. Supreme Court decision for Loving versus Virginia, which struck down all anti-miscegenation laws still remaining in 16 U.S. states and that were banning interracial marriage. So, so today is the day that... that we celebrate that we can be interracially married.
That is something we should celebrate. We had a guest yesterday talking about things that, you know, we often need to focus on our victories, things that, you know, where we have made progress, because otherwise it gets so depressing and frustrating some days.
Well, that's why I end my show with a happy ending every week, because
exactly.
I want some good news. And you got to remind people that as many people as there are out there trying to cause ill in the world, and there are quite a few of them because there are nearly 8 billion of us, there are the majority of people, I really believe, wake up every morning trying to make this world a better place, if not just around their own family to try and improve that, but in major ways. And if you look at, it gets eclipsed, unfortunately, like today being the anniversary of that date should be something that should be all over the news. But what will be all over the news is Ben Carson's little comment about there are other groups that are going to want to get married now that you let gay people get married, then there are other groups.
We've heard, it's perfect to bring up Loving v. Virginia, though, because anybody who uses those arguments, especially somebody
made those exact
ones of color, we've heard these arguments before.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, these exact arguments before.
I was watching the 700 Club last night because there's few things on television funnier than that. And Pat Robertson, who was one of my favorite Muppets, I just think he's funny. You know, this whole bobbly-headed kind of, I'm smiling, but just crapping over the joy of everybody who's living. He was off on the fact that some woman got, he goes, there's this story right near, from here in Virginia, conservative Virginia. I'm like, yeah, conservative Virginia. And he's like, where you could tell the demise of this country, a woman, and while she was pregnant with a man, with her husband's child, decided she fell in love with the woman, and now she's married that other woman. And she goes, that she divorced her. No, didn't divorce her. She got busted for bigamy, not the gay marriage thing, but for bigamy. Do you think? And that's right here in conservative Virginia. And I was like, yeah, I think right here in conservative Virginia, less than 100 miles from where Thomas Jefferson had a baby with one of his slaves. So let's not start acting like there was some sort of moral arc that was cracked.
Yeah,
by a woman who decided she'd had enough of pretending she was straight when she had this baby.
Virginia, who now boasts one of the richest cities in America because war profiteers essentially made their homes there.
Oh, it's the new steel town.
That strikes me as just outrageously moral.
It's the suburb of the Pentagon.
Yes. I think that's exactly what description.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Marty, I apologize. We completely took over your call and your wonderful positive point about loving day.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to point that stuff out. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right.
Thank you, guys. And we should celebrate more better Supreme Court decisions.
I agree.
Yes.
I mean, I think
especially we should remember that, you know, Supreme Courts didn't only just rule in favor of corporations.
Yeah.
That would be just important something.
And they're not going to about this Obamacare thing that's coming up, and they didn't before.
Can I come in here? TAA. Yeah. Looks like it went down.
It went down.
Look at that.
283 against.
And that's final vote?
Well, the final vote, there's not enough votes to get it over 50%, so I believe TAA went down.
If so, that's the case, then that
means
stops TPA
can't go
in its tracks in the House, which starts the, you know, sends the bill
back to the
Senate.
And Pelosi did officially, according to The Hill, come out against Obama on this trade policy.
Wow. Strange days.
On the lack of knowing what the trade policy is.
Right. Hey, whatever stops more American jobs from flowing overseas is okay with me. Marty, thank you for the call. We'll be back with more here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with Talk Radio News right after this. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. I see my friend Kenyatta in Redlands, California, who got a shout-out earlier in the show from another caller. Kenyatta, thanks for watching Free Speech TV, my friend.
Oh, thank you. You are just such a doll. Listen, I'm going to try and keep it as brief as I can, but I wanted to talk about the McKinney, Texas situation, mm-hmm. the swimming pool and all that. And there is a history. I don't know if most white Americans or black Americans for that matter, but there's a history of blacks and swimming pools in this country. And one of the reasons that most, and I think it was touched upon a couple of days ago or a day or so ago on the show, and I'm not going to, you know, relitigate that whole thing, but there is a history, and most of that history had to do with blacks having diseases and being dirty, but most of all it had to do with sex. And I'm going to stay away from that because that's too long a story, but I do want to tell you, about a year ago, I heard a story about one of the Hines members, the tap dancing family, that had gone to one of the older ones had gone to Beverly Hills, to the Beverly Hilton, and had been befriended by, and I can't remember, but very famous female white celebrity. I can't remember the name, but apparently she befriended Earl Father Hines, the patriarch of the Hines family, and the little boys, and she liked them, and they wanted to get in the pool. And the management of the hotel said that, well, they can't get in the pool. They can't get in the pool because they're black. And she, being, you know, famous and having a bit of clout, said she demanded that they be able to swim in the pool. hotel, the hotel acquiesced. But ultimately, after they got out of this pool, do you know what they did? They drained the pool. And I say that because I wanted to get into what I call not to be upstaged by my guru and your employer, Tom Hartman. He talks about white privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I've coined a new term called ACD, which is Anglo Cognitive Disorder. You know, because we're into this acronym world now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, RLS, everything. Yes, it's all
makes
about
a better
the
hashtag.
Alphabet.
Yes, right.
COPD, ED, ADD, ADHD. So I've come up with ACD. And ACD is Anglo-Cognitive Disorder. And I want to give you two examples of it. And your guest really segued into it beautifully.
Thank you.
When talking about Thomas Jefferson
yep.
a moment ago. Thomas Jefferson, I want you to imagine Barack Obama having a relationship with a 14-year-old girl. Sally Hemings was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, if you can imagine a black man having a sexual relationship with a 14-year-old, what, she gave consent? You know what I mean? But yet white people, and this is part of this cognitive dissonance, white people are somehow they can excuse that. Somehow they find a way of excusing that. Now, I just want to tie it up with this. The swimming pool thing is really specious, and I'll tell you why. Up until late last century, there were something called wet nurses for white families.
Right.
They were black women. You mean you're afraid of a disease from swimming in a pool with a black kid, but it's okay for your white kid to suck a black woman's breast? Really?
I think you just gave Shane a heart attack on if he was going to have to run for the dump button. But yes, I don't think it gets more personal than that in raising your kids. And I mean,
that was one of the we will keep black people out of our schools, our universities, our parks and our swimming pools.
But not the bedrooms.
Was it? Well,
yeah. Kenyatta, always, always, always amazing points. Thank you, my friend. The Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano and Hal Sparks, the three of us it takes to sit in for Tom today, and joined by the one and only Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goatsfortheoldgoats.com, free-don.org, all of those amazing websites. Victoria, some big news just breaking, am I right?
Well, actually, there's two pieces of big news just breaking, so I'm going to go with my piece of big news, and then we'll go with your piece of big news.
Okay.
Federal appeals court has extended an order blocking the release of Albert Woodfox, the last incarcerated member of a group of Louisiana prisoners known as the Angola Three. Now, a federal judge earlier this week ordered Woodfox's release and barred the state from trying him a third time in the 1972 death of a prison guard for which he said he was not guilty. The state appealed, and a three-judge panel of the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is considered a very conservative court, temporarily blocked his release, and the panel extended the order today until that state's appeal plays out. So that could be some considerable time.
Yes, certainly something we'll have to watch. And I think the other piece of big news, TPA in the House.
I'm going to get to that.
Am I preempting you? I'm sorry.
You
I'm very excited.
This is my news. Don't mind.
Go for it.
Okay. Well, a major trade vote, the trade adjustment assistance vote in the House of Representatives just failed 126 to 302.
Wow.
So this is a major fail for the president. President Obama went to the Capitol this morning to ask House Democrats to, quote, play it straight on a decisive vote. He spent roughly 45 minutes with Democratic lawmakers. He took no questions, but he told the party to vote your values, according to a source in the room. Apparently they did. I think one of the things, it was not clear which way people were going to go. A lot of people were, if not undecided, at least they had not announced their votes. Nancy Pelosi, the House Democratic leader, had not announced which way she was going to vote, but she spoke on the House floor very, very shortly before the vote. And she then made it clear that she would not vote for this or for Trade Promotion Authority, which would have been the next vote, and she explained her reasons why, and she spoke a great deal about climate, and that she did not believe that there were protections for climate in this bill. Although she praised work that the president has done on climate protections, and she said that there were some climate protections in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but she believes that there needs to be more of a discussion, and that she made it very clear that that she was just not coming out in this direction. And my sense of it was, and I don't yet know because the vote has only literally this minute happened, I don't know who voted which way yet. I think that this freed up a lot of undeclared Democrats to make their decision.
Now, is this mean the end, at least for this go round of fast track TPA because this didn't match the Senate bill, or am I missing something?
There will not be a vote. My understanding is that there will not be a vote for the Trade Promotion Authority today.
Wow, it's amazing news. I did not expect this. What's the reaction at the White House?
No reaction. This has just happened. This vote, the vote closed within the last 2 minutes.
Amazing.
And the briefing, which was scheduled to take place at 12:30, excuse me, I can do something very unprofessional, still has not taken place. I was looking outside my booth to see if any of my colleagues in the basement had yet gone up, and none of us have gone up. We are now an hour and a half late for the briefing.
Wow.
I expected once I saw how late we were, I thought they're going to wait until after this vote before they start the briefing.
Amazing. I don't know if it's possible to top those headlines. Is there anything else going on in the news?
Oh, yes, there is. Yes, Rachel Dolezal, an NAACP leader in Spokane, Washington, who identifies as African-American, though her parents claim she's white. Her mother said Friday her daughter has not explained to us why she's doing what she's doing and being dishonest and deceptive with her identity.
That is a very strange story. I've seen the headlines kind of passing on the TV in front of me. It seems a bit unreal.
It is very unreal. This is a very well-known woman in Washington State. She's the head of the NAACP. She also teaches at university on African-American studies. She's also been on television to speak about African-American issues. She also claims to have received death threats for being African-American. The NAACP has said that she's enduring a legal issue with her family. We respect her privacy. But her family says has shown her birth certificate that she is not African-American. She was raised with some adopted children from Africa. That apparently is when she started to identify as African-American. Her mother said it's very sad that Rachel has not just been herself. Her effectiveness in the causes of the African-American community would have been so much more viable, and she would have been much more effective if she'd just been honest with everybody. There's been a massive reaction on social media. Some people saying people could cross over lines of racial identity, but many African-Americans saying things like, if hashtag Rachel Dolezal can do it, so can I. I am now a white American. Give me good credit, the ability to swim, and police not beating me.
Wow. Any explanation from her as to why she did this? Or
no, not so far. She was confronted by a member of the press about this, and she so far has really been sort of gobsmacked.
It is a very strange story. I think that, you know, it's perfectly acceptable to speak on race issues and advocate for racial equality regardless of what your skin color is. I don't understand the need to pretend that somebody is what they're not. But that's just me, and I don't know the details of this story. So
it's developing.
Yes.
Strange story.
And it looks like TPA just passed, so we'll have to get into what that means in the next hour.
Fascinating.
We can't keep up with the news today. Thank you for all of your help, Victoria.
Thank you so much.
Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. And remember, goatsfortheoldgoat.com, as Ellen said yesterday. There's nothing stopping you from getting your dad a goat for Father's Day. Goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Every dad needs a goat. We'll be back with more. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano and the one and only Hal Sparks,
yes,
sitting in for Tom today.
Mm-hmm.
Hal is going to be performing in town.
Yeah, so at the Arlington Cinema Draft House tonight and tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then on the road throughout the summer.
I bet you people could probably find it at HalSparks.com, maybe.
They could. Follow me on Twitter at HalSparks. That's the easiest route, I think. Facebook is becoming a quagmire of, oh, no, I've run into my grandmother again.
Yes.
But yeah. As social media goes, that's a solid place for it. Yeah, we were talking a bunch about, because what's our official in the, so according to the Hill,
right,
Shane.
According to the Hill,
yeah,
the way it goes, the way this rule was put together,
yeah,
the TAA and the TPA were packaged together. So if one goes down, none of them goes through.
Mm-hmm.
But even though the TAA was voted down, and we announced that during the last hour, they went ahead with the votes on TPA, so I was watching, and as Victoria was saying they're not going to vote on it, for some reason the Republicans decided to call the vote, even though I believe it's meaningless. This is according to the Hill.
Right.
So I'm still waiting. You know, these parliamentary, you know, maneuvers are so difficult to understand.
I mean, and they're used because of their opaqueness,
sure,
specifically to do that. It helps you redesign an entire – you can build an entire talking point on, I voted down the TAA. The TPA was a matter of normal, you know,
procedure, yeah, that every
that
president in the last 20 years.
I voted for that,
yeah,
because I thought it worked as a good, you know, voice measure, you know, to tell people where I stood on actual trade, but I wasn't on giving authority automatically. But and suddenly it goes through and you do have fast track and then whatever. Again, I was saying, you know, I get this president wanting fast track authority, especially if you want to do anything on climate rules,
yeah,
protecting the climate, because this Congress is not going to vote for it. Is not going to vote for any trade policy that favors protection of climate. They're not going to do it. And so while on the one hand, especially when it comes to war powers, you want Congress and the Senate involved, namely not because you actually think they're going to be making the right choice, but because you know they will use it as a weapon later to convince a certain swath of the American public that they are tough.
Yes.
Because the more stupid things you do with a gun, the tougher it makes you, apparently.
Apparently.
But the same thing applies to trade, is that, you know, you want congressional skin in the game so that once the president signs something, they can't back on it or try to underfund it somehow through other backdoor means and double back on it. Not that they wouldn't, but that's it. But this president would present something, I believe, with a much more climate protective heavy measure.
I will say that the Republicans have added or are trying to add different amendments to this whole TPA and TAA. I don't remember if it's under the customs part,
mm-hmm,
which would prevent any part of the TPP or any trade agreement from being used to combat climate change.
Right.
They've put that into these amendments.
Yeah.
So this battle is, you know, going on in so many different levels.
Yeah.
It really is. And just like you said, you know, these votes are taken almost purposefully, if not directly, purposely, in a way that they can be spun however it's convenient for the particular, mm-hmm, lawmaker, that I voted against this bill but for this one because I wanted to show X, Y, and Z.
That's why I prefer bills actually that have numbers or single letter acronym kind of things like B-1215.
Yeah. Like the USA Freedom Act.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
The Save Us from the Invaders.
Well,
Act.
This one's HR 1314.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We will still see. There has to be, and I know Tom has spoken about this a lot, we need trade protection in this country. We need a balanced trade initiative. We need tariffs. We need protections of environmental standards raised to what the United States is, not
right,
the other way around.
We need a race to the top, not a race to the bottom.
Exactly.
And it's still left to be argued and seen where and how this particular trade deal would be used. Like you bring up climate as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of countries that are doing a heck of a lot more than we are on
China,
climate,
for example.
And they could certainly argue that, hey, we are legislatively obligated now to combat climate in this particular way, and you aren't. That's an unfair advantage. So you have to fight climate change too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't really see that happening.
I do.
Typically,
because
we
I do
see
through
this
our
as a
industries. I think that's exactly why the Koch brothers and their ilk don't want climate aspects put into trade agreements, because they know that we're on the receiving end of that more so, especially with what the European Union is doing, and specifically with China. China arguably hit peak coal 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They set a goal to do it by 2017.
Reduced carbon use 8%.
Since January.
Right, which is the equivalent of all of the emissions of the UK.
Yes.
The all of the emissions of the UK in 1 year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that should scare you also that that country has areas where they're producing that amount of carbon. I mean, if you looked at the parks in Beijing and the like.
Yeah.
And let us not forget, if we're going to pick on China, that London fog, the jacket that everybody knows is Sherlock Holmes's long coat and the classic double-breasted trench coat from it. That's the London fog. London fog was not actual fog. It was industrial smoke from the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in England, that there was so much soot everywhere that you wore this shellackable hose-down jacket
to protect your
clothing to and from your home to work. They were getting coal miner diseases in the cities.
Wow.
And China's just playing catch-up and arguably doing a quicker work of it, because the damage we forget, like while we're focused on what damage we're doing to the environment currently. Let us not forget that we've done damage up to this point that needs to be undone as well.
Right.
Rivers and streams being what they are. And so this, you know, China is going to be on the side of they can jump ahead of us, much like India is now. They've skipped. They didn't need the infrastructure for phones. They went straight to mobile. So they have towers, not lines across the entire country, spending a lot of oil, laying out tracks of
the fossil fuels actually used, like the burning of vehicles, burning fuel in vehicles to lay out that cable. And it's also, you know, these are petroleum based products.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wires are coated in rubber.
And so they don't even need any of that. And so that pushes them ahead in the climate change fight in a way that we're not. It's the same way that when you're in a really nice hotel, you pay for internet, but when you're in Motel 6, the Wi-Fi is free. It's because they paid early on to put Ethernet cables through the entire hotel, and they're still paying it off.
Right, but do you really think that that we can use these to our benefit in the ways that we're talking about, that it wouldn't be the opposite, and when the corporations have control, they'll go in the other direction and say, we're not paying for the cost of climate change.
The lesson of it is Lee Iacocca and the Chrysler move in the 80s and how he was touted as being, you know, this kind of great businessman for what he did, which was essentially undo Carter's emissions rules, not, you know, innovate and create a new carburetor or build a better car. Here's what happened, though. This was the long-term damage done. When Carter set new emissions standards, and even though Reagan took them out and they kind of backed away from them in the 80s, the Japanese and the Germans especially went, okay, I guess that's the standard, and if we want to sell cars in the United States, let's just start doing that. They went about doing the R&D to make it happen.
Right.
And they overtook our entire car market because their cars were cheaper, more efficient, cleaner. They ran better
and because we allowed them here without high tariffs.
That's partly true. Right. But then the same thing will be true of sort of climate oriented things. We're going to hold back and not do it. And then they're going to get way ahead of us in the technology of clean energy, which is the very thing that will be the industry of the future.
Yeah.
So we're just automatically putting ourselves back by going, instead of spending our money on R&D, we're spending our money lobbying to get a rule taken away. And that's the non-existence of the EPA and the like is the goal of Alec and the Koch brothers.
It was part of the 1980 Koch brothers platform when he ran as vice president libertarian ticket. And it's part of Rick Perry's platform, among others, right?
Because they know that all of their donors, were they to have to pay to clean up the messes they make in the course of having a business, would put them out of business.
Right.
They would never be able to run it. It's like saying I have a coffee shop and I have to shoot a client a year to make a profit. And everybody going, no, you can't do that. That's murder. And I'm going, well, I
have to be profitable. Privatize the gains, socialize the losses. Their favorite tactic. Lots more in store. It is Anything Goes Friday. Back with your calls after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Do you think the TPP could be used to protect our climate? Is there any chance of that? Give us a call. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. Who is in their fun drive? You could get a Bernie Bear. Bernie Bear. Please support your local. I think that's the first time.
I didn't realize it was a Bernie Bear until you brought it up. That's great. And so it's white, kind of scraggly hair.
Yes.
Is the idea.
Yes.
Because his has got kind of that, like, I just woke up with a great idea. Look on his face, yeah. You know.
But among other things, and please support your local nonprofit stations and all your local stations, even your commercial stations. You know, call them up, let them know you support their advertisers, their contributors. Support media. Support ideas
especially
and information.
Ground up stuff. You know, like when you're talking about the CNNs, the Foxes of the world. And I mean specifically them. I think MSNBC is a little better after dark, but during the day, it's still got the same kind of problem, which is we think the public is stupid, so we're going to hire journalists who ask stupid questions as representatives of the people who are stupid.
I often have that problem where so much of the media thinks they have to speak to the public at about a sixth or seventh grade level, and I disagree with that. You know,
you've got to strive for the top of it. That's what, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I talk to these people every day. And I say this on both the left and the right. We don't need to dumb down every issue for the electorate. There may be portions of the population
you need
that
to dissect.
Right, that you need to explain it to, but
Material sense. Don't talk down to them like they're a toddler.
Exactly.
Yeah. In Second City, it was always assume your audience is smarter than you are.
Yes.
Operate from that space.
And if you speak to them on a regular basis like I do, you know that they're smarter than you are.
Okay.
Speaking of, let's check in with Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Anita, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. You had some thoughts on FDR.
Yes. First of all, hi, Danielle.
Hi.
Hi, Kano. And hi, Hal.
Hi.
Hal, I think you're brilliant. I love you.
Oh, thank you. Love you right back.
I'm pretty sure FDR would have supported TPA. He was very much all about the executive power.
Mm-hmm.
He issued more executive orders than any other president in history, and he was always trying to find ways he could do things on his own.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure he would have supported that, and I think we've been a little unfair as far as Hillary Clinton goes.
I think that there's been a lot of unfair criticisms of Hillary Clinton. There might be some fair criticisms out there, or at least points we would like her to clarify or give us her position on, but I think there are a lot of unfair criticisms as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think, I can understand why she hasn't said anything, you know, yet. Bernie Sanders really doesn't have as much to lose at this point as Hillary Clinton if she were to come out against the TPP or the TPA.
Mm.
And she may have been there in the initial negotiations over it, but she hasn't been Secretary of State for the last 2.5 years. So she hasn't seen what has gone on since then. Senator Sanders has had a chance.
Well, I think Hillary definitely has an idea. They always have their ear to the ground as far as what's going on in Washington and where this stuff's going. And quite frankly, with her experience as Secretary of State and with her husband's global initiative, I think there is they are more aware of the trade limitations and power.
Yeah, and her campaign manager's brother happens to be lobbying on the TPP, but, for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. We'll be back with more. Thank you, Anita. Welcome back to the Tom Harkin Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shane and Hal Sparks, sitting in for Tom today.
How are you? We're all sitting in for Tom. Yes. We have to do it collectively. I'm not sitting in for
Tom. It takes a village.
Yeah, it does.
Yes.
To write as many books. We could build a village with all the books he's written.
Yes. Yes, we could house at least a small child.
Yeah, recycle them and make them into eco-friendly domes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it is Anything Goes Friday, so let's get back to your calls with Wayne, listening on WCPT in Chicago.
Great station.
Wayne, thank you for listening to the Tom Harbin Program.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call. What I want to say is I ran a full blitz today, but if I was in the NFL, if I was an NFL coach, I would have been penalized because I ran a 14-man blitz today. You only have 11 men on the field in the NFL. I ran a 14-man blitz. I called 14 of the 17 congressmen, United States congressmen, in the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm. But that's impressive just on the amount of time you were probably stuck on hold.
Well, no, I was lucky. It was only like between 2 and 3 minutes for each one before I talked to an operator who connect me to the offices.
And what was the overall, you know, feeling you got after speaking with that many different people? Was there a consensus or lots of different views?
Well, most of them didn't actually state their views, but a couple of them did, and they stated their view that they were against it. I got pretty good feedback. Most of them listened to my comments and thanked me for my comments, and a few of them were just saying how they were leaning toward not voting for TPP, because what I was trying to, my two main points for them were that the United States Constitution with the Commerce Clause, which says that Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations, not the executive branch, not the president. So I was trying to impress upon them not to voluntarily surrender their power to regulate commerce with foreign nations. I was also impressing upon them the fact that if any of them would take this information that they read in the TPP legislation to their constituents, they could actually be prosecuted and go to jail.
And any response on that? Because I've heard many people, many callers ask about that, suggest that one of these senators or congresspeople should just expose it, should just, even though they know they're going to get in trouble, should just release the details of the TPP. I'm not sure.
Right.
You know, I'm not sure of my thoughts on that.
Well, what happens is, anytime the government wants to hide something, they always use national security. So, like, for instance, Alan Grayson, they threatened him with treason if he released the information to his constituents.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones committing the treasons by trying to pass this disastrous trade deal on America.
Yeah. Well, I think in general they would probably be thrilled to silence Alan Grayson. They don't.
I'm wondering how you would go through the process, though, of revealing it, because you can't bring anything in with you.
Right.
I would imagine that they physically prevent you from doing that. For example, if you were to have a phone and a camera, they say, no, you can't bring that in there, and it would be an armed guard type of situation. So it's not like they have a copy of it in the PDF, and all they have to do is publish it.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually getting the documents, you can't bring in something to write anything down.
You swear bringing those glasses that have the little camera built into the side of them. And
Google Glass.
Glass.
Sure, right. They would see that coming or whatever.
I'm just wondering, though.
You'd be safer walking in with an Oculus Rift on your head. There's no way they can release the actual, you know, it's like, you know, when you want to go to the Vatican and see the first 7 drafts of the Bible. Okay, I'll let that sit there.
Yeah.
In reality, none of them will have the ability to do that. What they can do is talk about parts that concern them in the future. But the reality is there are legitimate national security interests in trade deals between countries not being made public because of what other countries will do to undermine those trade deals.
Wait, that's a pretty expansive definition.
It's huge.
Of security. Security means that somehow someone's going to be attacked with a physical weapon.
That's not how you damage people. I would argue that the people were made unsafe by what Enron did. But, you know, rolling blackouts in California caused the deaths of several people. And you can say that those people weren't beaten to death.
Using that expanse of a definition of national security.
But we're talking
security.
About national relations. I'm telling
that's
you.
That's different than national security, though.
Well, I'm telling you that if you were if there was President Shane, President Shane
that's
would
totally
be confronted.
That's different because that would be great. But
yes, I agree. I would vote for you.
Thank
I'm saying President Shane would be confronted with a situation that reaches the level of national security but does not qualify as an offensive weaponous attack.
Sure.
That's part of what this will do. The cyber attacks are a good example of that kind of thing. You could know what trade special relations were going on between us and Pacific partners, and in Saudi Arabia decide that it would be in your best interest because you have the exact same security system in your country, computer-wise, that designed the one they use at the Pentagon, to hack your way in and make something go awry.
Cyber, yes, but I just don't see everything. I don't. I advocate.
Everything, no. That's what I'm saying. You don't have to have everything, Shane. That's what I'm saying. You don't. The whole thing doesn't have to be qualified. I'm telling you how they do it. I'm not even saying how
right,
I agree with
I
it.
Disagree with it. I'm telling, what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm not saying the trade agreement is necessarily like national security.
I right.
Certainly not parts about how they're going to litigate between corporations and nations. I don't see that as national security.
No, I totally agree. Okay. That's what I'm saying.
I see it in and of itself.
Four paragraphs of it could qualify as being under the legit protectorate of the NSA, and that gives them total carpet coverage of everything else. I say
the bootstrapping has got to stop.
Those pieces is my point.
Yeah.
Get to the points that are absolutely, you're right. And you could agree with them. You could say openly, these parts, you're right. This would affect, this would leave us open to trade manipulation and undermining, which affects people's dollar value, which affects their ability to buy health care and take care of themselves, to feed themselves, our ability to get around, undermine our industry, all these kind of things that are in our national interest, that aren't violent attacks.
We know that our government is excellent at redacting specific pieces
they
of information.
They should just go ahead and do it.
They've
redact
got a long
those parts.
History. Yeah,
and then show us the rest of the TPP
go
that you don't
have. Go ask Bush and Cheney. If you're not sure, they'll show you how to black stuff out and show
it
the rest.
I hide in my own safe. I have a safe just for that kind of stuff.
Lots more in store here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. Thank you, Wayne.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
What's your thoughts on the TPP? Is trade national security? 202-536-3270. Give us a call. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shane and the one and only Hal Sparks, who's in town this
someday
weekend.
I hope to be the two and only.
He's going
to
clone himself.
I might have to bifurcate just to get all this stuff done.
If anybody could figure out cloning, you've got a little geeky science in you. That's
a little, yeah. I'm actually performing at the SENS Foundation gathering in San Jose, up near San Francisco, in August. And they're the people working on a 1,000-year lifespan. With like Ray Kurzweil, Google, and Aubrey de Grey, and like those
do
folks.
We really want to be around 1,000 years?
Yes, we do.
Will the planet be?
We won't be on this planet still. We can't. We got to terraform and move to other planets. And there's a lot bigger ones. It would take us a lot longer to screw up long term, technically speaking.
Yeah.
Plus, I don't happen to think there are any adults on the planet. I don't. I think at 90, 110, you're still a child.
Well, if actions dictate whether or not you're an adult or a child, there's some, certainly some
Strom Thurmond acts
validity.
Like a toddler right up to the end. I'm just saying. And most of my grandparents go, I should have, like my grandmother started acting like, I want this, at nine. So I understand, that humans might need an extra 150 years to actually care.
To actually figure it out?
Yeah, because one of the things about, only live, look at the Bush's answer about climate issues was, hey, we'll all be dead. What if you weren't?
Right.
What if you could live
kids?
Healthfully another 100 years? Maybe you'd start giving more of a crap. I'm not, we won't get to the fear of elitist vampires or robots running the world, that kind of where we all seem to go.
Yeah.
But in reality, there is a truth to that, and that living 150 years might do us some good.
Yeah, I know.
That'll be it. That'll light up your phone lines. We can talk about that for a year.
Yes,
in danger of turning this into coast to coast if I'm not careful.
Tom's audience is particularly fond of science topics, so
yeah,
I'm
of course.
Sure they would have fun.
AKA
talking to you.
Smart.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So shall we take some?
Yeah. Yes. Let's get back to those. Let's check in with Paul. In Kirkland, Washington. Thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hey there, everybody.
Hey.
Good to talk to you. Al, I was just thinking, the problem with planets that are a lot bigger is they have a lot more gravity.
That's true. We'd have to be a lot stronger.
See, perfect example.
Not all of them do, though.
Smart audience.
Not all of them do, though. Not all of them. Some of them have compensatory gravity. So they're not all just because they get bigger doesn't mean the gravity is stronger on the planet in generic terms. There are some, depending on their orbit, depending on other factors, it lightens there. And even on this planet, gravity is not consistent. You know, there are points on this planet where there's less gravity. It's to the micron, but it's true, where it's not consistent even on the surface of the Earth. So
I think
go.
Between Paul and you talking, my IQ just jumped a few points. Sorry, Paul, go ahead.
Well, gravity's always heavier in my doctor's office when I get weighed, so I don't know. Maybe that's the point you're talking about.
Right, right.
So anyway, let's get on to what I've just discovered. Well, I haven't just discovered this, but something I've been considering is Republican tax increases. I don't think people have really thought about this, but example here is in Kansas, where they are running a tremendous $500 million deficit in a state of 2.9 million people. Governor Sam Brownback, who will not raise taxes, even though the Republican legislature is now saying you got to raise taxes.
Yeah,
he says he won't, but then he does. You see, what Sam Brownback is doing? He says we're going to cut government spending by 6.2%. And if you follow me here,
on life,
that means that you are only getting 93.8% of what you're paying for, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that means that equates, if you, this is a funny thing about how inverses work. If you divide your dollar, $1, 1.00, by 93.8 cents or 0.938, you get 1.066, which means he just imposed a 6.6 tax increase across the board.
Yeah. Right? I don't think any person in Kansas, any Republican in Kansas probably just followed that, but essentially taxpayers aren't getting what they paid for, and thus they are being
That's a tax increase. And secondly, let's not forget that the purpose of the government is not to draw profit, but to raise the life and abilities and capabilities of the human beings that are there. The profit of a government is shown in the health and happiness and serviceability of its entire collective, as the group itself. So this idea that he's taking a tax. He's just not taking the form of cash. He's just making your life harder.
Right, and the other thing is that since it's across the board, that means it's ultimately regressive because everybody is getting the same tax increase. And this occurs to me with it's the same situation with John Boehner's lovely sequester.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We had a 10% across the board cut, which means we're only getting 90% of what we're paying for, and that equates to an 11.1% tax increase. He's the one, the Republicans who don't want to raise taxes.
Right.
They just raised it on everybody 11.1%.
Yeah, well, Sam Brownback is a special kind of Republican crazy, if you ask me. He essentially came in and said businesses shouldn't pay any taxes. And whatever we have to cut, slash, destroy in order to make that possible, that's fine. But he couldn't destroy, cut, and slash enough to fill
the
huge gap in his budget, despite going after, huge cuts in schools, their infrastructure. Apparently Kansas is very proud of their, a beautiful highway system that he is unable to maintain now. I mean, it is the perfect example of if Republicans love trickle down, he turned on the fire hose to see, let's do this in the extreme, go big or go home and see what happens. And it failed miserably. And even his own Republican state legislature is saying, hey, man, this was a really bad idea. Mm-hmm. We need to backpedal from this.
Well,
that's what's going on. Actually, I'm calling from visiting. I'm on the road myself. If you want to call us that, I'm in Michigan. Which I think Morocco has better roads than they do here in Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what they're doing here. It's all tax cutting so that Dan Gilbert and Tom Illich can own the city of Detroit. And it's tax cuts. And I've been pointing out to my family, how are you going to pay for that? Because now they think they're going to pay for the roads by taking the money out of the schools because, you don't need to educate anybody.
Yeah, and pretty soon it's just privatize both. Thank you very much, Paul. Have a safe trip there in Michigan. Watch out for the potholes.
Yeah,
I will.
Yeah. And the big swaths of greenery full of people with no resource and no recourse.
Yes.
Because that's one of the other problems you don't talk about in these big kind of they really vilify urban situations, making them look like this is the cities are where the
inner
danger
city.
Is. Yeah, right. Yeah. When in reality, violent crime in cities especially has been dropping precipitously over the last few decades, and it's not because of prisons. It's because of opportunity and all kinds of other elements. You go to the city to actually make a living. When you live out in the sticks, at a certain point, you run out of options. There's enough of those people now that it makes it really scary. And they just had that guy killed his he was an anti-government constitutionalist kind of Tea Partier dude, killed his family and himself, texted a friend on Facebook or something, messaged him on Facebook saying his wife had been riding him all day about something, nagging. So that's why he killed everybody and then set the house on fire and shot himself with a gun he bought legally, owns legally.
Yeah, as is often the case.
As is often the case. But this is not a guy that you're running into while you're walking down the street in a major city. This is a guy in a very rural. This is what Huckabee would call real America.
Right. Yeah, there's no other opportunity. Right. If once, especially you want to talk about trade and bring trade. These were a lot of times the areas where factories and mills
used to be meaningful towns. It's like, you know, it's like a nightmare version
they were
of cars.
Built.
You know,
That's why they existed. They were built around that industry, whatever the industry was for that particular area. If it was a plant or a factory, the towns were often built around
them. Even fuel towns. Yes. Now the cars are more efficient. You stop half as much. So these little fuel towns, Michigan has a ton of them. They were based on the idea that this was where the gas pump was. And that made a town flourish for almost 25 years. That's long enough to start building schools, having a regular city base. Fairfield, California, in between San Francisco and Sacramento, is tumbleweeds.
It's an excellent place to put some electric vehicle charging stations.
Sure, because there's nothing else.
Why not?
Yeah.
And I bet you they'd have to hire some folks to build those.
To help run them and maintain them and make sure that the weather doesn't act upon them. I totally agree.
It seems to make common sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
1 minute? All right, we'll take one quick one. Let's go with Carl in Denver, watching on Free Speech TV. How's it going, Carl? Carl going once. Carl in Denver. Oh.
That's right. We only had a minute anyways. He had more to say.
Carl, I can't hear you. Give us a call back, and we'll check with you again. Some lovely technology issues. This you witnessed when you first got here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you're operating computer equipment and the like in 105 degrees, whatever it is in here.
Exactly.
So it's reasonable that computers like ice.
They do.
They really want a new ice age. And I'd say, you know, that global warming, that wasn't a computer's idea.
No. And considering that pretty much everything we operate, from our cars to our cell phones to our TVs to, you know, our children's toys
Texans,
are computer operated these days.
Wait till Texans will really start caring about global warming when they can't ever set their phone on their dash of their car without the temperature gauge showing up on it. Your iPhone and your Samsung Galaxy has shut down until it can cool off. You know, boils your battery.
That has never happened to me with a cell phone, but I have had a radio melt on the dashboard of a car in Florida.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It will increasingly happen. Get used to it.
Fun global warming stories here on the Tom Hartman Program. All that and more. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's Anything Goes here on the Tom Hartman Program, 202-536-3270. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV.
You got to love it. Every time we come back in, we're in the middle of a laugh.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Hal's in the studio then.
Yes, because he keeps telling me jokes that he's, you know.
Yeah. Some of which can't be said on broadcast television, so I have to dial them down a tad. Yeah.
Yes, but that's why you need to, you know, go in.
You got to come see me live.
Yeah. Let's check in with Joe in Marshall, North Carolina, watching on Free Speech TV. Joe, you had thoughts on white privilege.
Yeah, I tried to get in on Monday. I know I'm off topic, but...
It's Anything Goes. No worries.
At the end of the Civil War... the government had the authority to, and they actually did divide the land. And I believe that's the beginning of white privilege. That's what we were talking about Monday. A lot of white people got the land. All they have to do is be born. They have a home, and they leave it to their children. And that's the ultimate white privilege, in my opinion. And then a lot of these people hate the government, but it was the federal government that gave them basically the life they have, everything they own. It's just so hypocritical.
Yeah.
And yeah, no question. Look at the – you ever watched the movie Far and Away when they talk about the land runs? You just go down there and grab a flag. You're a white person.
Claim it.
Here's a flag. We've cleared all the Indians. We've made sure there are no black people who will even compete with you. So you just start at this line, And you just run and pick a piece of land.
And that's yours.
Yep. And you just keep that forever.
And that wealth is, you know, why the wealth gap. Yeah. The average white family has something like, I don't remember the...
Mm-hmm. Something like 80,000.
And the average black family has like 5,000.
Yeah.
You know, it's an astronomical divide.
And there's strategic economic things that have happened all along to make sure that that's stabilized and kept that way for a long time. There's what, you know, sort of like the crab bucket analogy where, you know, once a crab starts to crawl out, the others will pull them back down. Well, there's also the guy standing there ready to shake the bucket to anytime any of them try to get out. And so a lot of the stock market shifts we've seen, a lot of buyouts and weird manipulations with the currency and interest rates over the years have been meant to keep poor people poor. No question. They're like, uh-oh, things are starting to get nice. Yep. Give it a shake.
A lot of the bailouts, statistically benefited white people more than minorities.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, did that address your point?
There are no 40-acre farms that black people own in this area. Whatever happened to the 40 acres and the mule? I mean, they must have been cheated out of it. But
well, it was never actually ratified and therefore never actually went through. That's been the argument. That's why Spike Lee's company is called 40 Acres and a Mule. Because he's still waiting, in theory.
And there's a lot of great research on what the value in terms of dollars would be today if that restitution had ever actually been paid. And it's almost immeasurable at how much minorities, specifically African Americans, built this country, how much is owed to them.
Well, let's talk about Kansas. Yeah. And to his point, exactly what the benefit, the reward circumstance, the return on investment, actually, of giving that land to those people freely. Most of the people didn't know much about farming. They weren't necessarily farmers. Some of them were Civil War soldiers. Some of them were people that had grown up in, you know, around plantations or run other industry or just didn't have a job at all. But they decided they're going to go out to the Midwest, you know, specifically Kansas and Oklahoma, and I'll just farm.
Yeah.
Knowing nothing about farming, they tore up the ground soil and created the Dust Bowl.
Yeah. Gee, talk about history repeating itself.
Right.
We'll be back with more here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shane and Hal Sparks sitting in for Tom today. It's Anything Goes Friday. Lots of news on the TPP, and we were discussing FDR at the beginning of the show. Lots of topics today. White privilege.
Yes, we said it kind of in passing during the break, but to our last caller's point, had they given those 40 acres and a mule along with all the other white people that they were handing it to black people during that time, a lot of the black people were doing the farming for the white plantation owners. They knew more about the mechanics and actuality of farming than did people who ran the plantations themselves. So had they been given a farm, they would have known better than to destroy the land with a single crop. They would have known better than to, you know, better irrigation plans and the like. And their neighboring farmers, they probably would have helped them out, sans all the racism that would have kept that person from eliciting.
As did the Native Americans before them.
Right.
You know, as did the cultures who were here for thousands of years before white men decided that, no, I'm here now, so this belongs to me.
Sure. Yeah. Well, keep in mind that even the Native tribes that were nomadic moved once they'd made a mess.
Right.
And the mess was cleaned up by the animals that came by there. There was a natural, actual order to it. It wasn't that they somehow everything that they created somehow just evaporated.
Yeah.
It just got absorbed because of the building techniques and the like. And we find them as, you know, arrowheads buried
in dirt. Right, lost civilizations, lost cultures.
The problem was is assuming that you could push somebody out of the way to do it was the turning point. Oh. You guys are not done with this area, and you've just made it perfect for fishing and farming. Excuse me.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it was.
How nice of you to prep this area.
Right,
for
it wasn't like
folks.
White people took the land from natives after they'd moved to follow the seasons. Like, well, you guys weren't coming. We didn't know you were coming back. It wasn't that.
No.
It was hey, while you're here and the land is kind of perfect, we'll just actually follow you around to see where the best hunting, fishing, and stuff is, because you guys have been here for a long time, kill you, and then just park.
Right.
And then, of course, in many cases, starve to death because
You couldn't replicate what
right, was
a
going
culture
on.
That has been here thousands of years. Yes. Mm-hmm. So in the last few minutes here, let's try and get a couple more calls in and check in with Morris listening on KPFK in Long Beach, California. Hi, Morris. Thanks for listening
KPFK.
To the Tom Harbin program.
They might actually be in their fun drive as
they
well.
They may. They very well may be.
No, we're cool right now, but listen, I'm glad to hear that everybody's active trying to do something because that's what it's all about.
Amen.
And what I did was I called the NALC, a guy by the name of Frederick Rolando. Now, he's the president of the NALC. Those are your letter carriers. And I told them, I said, here, y'all need to go on strike right now. It's just that simple. I know there are rules and guidelines, but it appears as if nobody's respecting them. So I did that this morning, 202-393-4695. And, Daniel, I wanted to ask you this question. Do you think that move that the Justice Department did with respect to the FIFA executives, do you think that was a political move, or were they really trying to bring integrity back to sports?
To be honest, I have no idea. I haven't thought through it in that particular way.
It was hard for me to hear.
Whether or not the Justice Department arrests in the FIFA scandal were just political.
They're worldwide. Everybody wants a piece of this because it's a very rich organization. And whether or not somebody's going to jail in one particular country or not, it's more about the fines.
Yeah.
It was effectively a giant bribery and drug organization that they've gotten their claws into, essentially.
I didn't find it that surprising that our Justice Department, pretty much like our media, our politicians, the public, as a large percentage of the public, care more about the integrity of sports than of our Congress, of the way our nation functions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw, look at Deflategate, how much political news media was focused on whether or not Tom Brady had somebody blow up footballs too much. I mean,
But keep in mind, it's a billion-dollar day. Super Bowl is a billion-dollar day.
By a nonprofit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is not me arguing for what's right. This
no,
is
I know.
Me arguing for why
right.
they do what they do. And a lot of towns in this country have bet all their everything they have on their sports team. They are undercutting school funding. They are not paying to fix bridges. They are making sure that old people aren't protected from maltreatment at old folks' homes and the like. And they are using that money to give tax breaks and financial direct incentive to a sports team for a for-profit company.
Yeah.
And if that fails, if America just decides in an afternoon we like soccer better, or in an afternoon, I'd rather watch baseball, and we don't have a baseball team. We do have a football team. That whole city's economic infrastructure has just been thrown, and that's just on the public decides in a Twitter race, football, for a week.
Yeah.
That undercuts it's amazing how much impact that can have financially on a city. Especially if they're going, this is something we have to do. All the politicians have that riding on it because they've lied to their constituency and said that this helps the city. And if it goes...
Yeah, I mean, I know that they say it's jobs. I guess I just look at it and I can't help but envision the Romans feeding people to the lions. Like, that this is all just... I'm a sports fan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I've ever said that on air. I love football. Shane and I watch football on a regular basis. I don't follow soccer or baseball, but that's just a preference. And I don't watch NFL. I watch college football,
right.
But there's still enough corruption in that. I'm not saying this as somebody who thinks there should be no sports, but I think it's too often used
it outweighs,
as a it's a distraction.
We've turned into high school. America is we're younger than a lot of countries, and we've reached our 15, 16-year-old age compared to other countries that have been around for
an unruly teenager.
Yeah, right. We are. We're a 15-year-old boy who's totally fascinated with guns and boobies and has and hates being told what to do by his parents and is stomping around.
Such a perfect analogy.
And doesn't care about math and science. And wants to go watch the football game so he can meet a girl.
I don't know if we answered your question, Morris, but that's certainly our thoughts on the matter. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to Tom and Louise for letting us sit in. Thanks to Lori and Jim and Shane and Pal for helping put this show on.
Mm-hmm.
Tom will be back on Monday, so have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.